The One by Lillian DeWaters. Chapter 7, Questions and Answers. Many students have certain specific questions they would like answered, and we shall now take up some of these queries and explanations, as doubtless they will be of deep concern to many readers. I cannot understand how mind or mentality is nothing, yet creates. How can nothing create something? It can be easily seen that the mind that creates worlds, people, animals, houses, sun, moon, and earth in the night dream is experiencing a false creation, and that both the mind and its creation are nothing. The mentality does not create something, but creates pictures, illusions, deceptions, nothing, whether in the night dream or in the dream of material existence. One of Clear Spiritual Vision wrote, "Mortal mind creates its own physical conditions. You must instruct mortal mind with immortal truth." Now, mortal mind, or the human mentality, is not true consciousness, and therefore all that it creates is like a dream creation, having beginning and end. One might easily challenge, how absurd, how unscientific for anyone to proclaim that we must instruct mortal mind with immortal truth, for the same author wrote elsewhere, "Scientifically speaking, there is no mortal mind." Many of us have found that much mental confusion can be avoided if we will first of all determine whether the author is speaking absolutely from the plane of reality or speaking relatively from the plane of the human experience. We find apparent contradictions throughout the Bible and in most books on mind or truth, but such contradictions vanish under the light of insight or understanding of the author's platform. When it is written that mortal mind creates its own physical conditions, such a statement concerns the human experience. Mortal mind, wrong thinking and believing, creates sin, sickness, death, yet such creation is nothing actual, nothing that has God, truth, back of it. Therefore, such creation is illusion, dream substance only, and when mind is instructed with immortal truth, then such unreal creation ceases. The question arises, but how can that which is nothing be taught or instructed? We know, do we not, that we cannot instruct intelligence? We also know that there is no actual way from earth to heaven, the only path being that of belief or insight. The way of demonstration, then, is first through belief and later through insight. Merely declaring, "I am the truth, I am a perfect being in heaven now," will not deliver to you a heavenly experience, for one must either believe in truth or understand truth in order to experience heavenly harmony. Teaching or instructing the mind is therefore a device, the same as any belief is a device. The only reason why understanding takes place at all is because man already knows and understands all things. The real reason why Jesus or anyone understanding truth carries on instruction is this is for the glory of God. Those who know truth know that when they heal or instruct, they do not heal or instruct, but that all things are done for the glory of God, the glory of truth. Suppose that a child enters a dimly lighted room and screams with terror because there in the corner of the room is a dark, peculiar-looking object. Now, his mother, entering the room, knows the truth, that is, she knows that a fur-trimmed cloak is thrown in such a manner over a chair as to give the appearance of some unknown animal. Shall this mother instruct the true mind of her child? No. Intelligence, true mind, cannot be instructed, nor can it be deceived. Since the child believes that a fearful object is in the room, and since his true mind does not need to be instructed, then it must be mortal mind, or a false sense of mind that needs instruction, must it not? The mother could not move the animal out of the room, for it is not present, showing that there is no actual way of deliverance for this child. The path, therefore, is either through belief or through understanding. The mother might pick up the cloak and thrust it into a cloak closet. The child then would be quieted, soothed through belief, belief that the fearful object could no longer harm. Or the mother could swiftly bring understanding to the child by turning on the light, exposing the presence of the fur-trimmed cloak. Again, when one attends college, studying astronomy, art, languages, it is not intelligence, true mind, that is instructed, is it? And if one commits some sin, we surely do not consider healing or instructing the true mind, which Jesus said could not sin, do we? Who convinceth me of sin? Was his daring challenge. When one is sick, in pain, or distress, we do not administer help to divine mind, do we? Thus we are brought face to face with the fact that since it is not divine mind which is instructed, helped, healed, it must be mortal mind or the human mentality. Such instruction, such healing, however, is like nothing at all happening or taking place for human existence. Existence in the flesh, existence in a changeable world, is itself but deception, illusion, dream. When mortal mind is instructed, it is not an actual process, for such instruction is a device only, displacing false sense with truth. False mind cannot actually be taught, but can be coalesced into nothingness, thus revealing the allness and infinitude of intelligence. If you were dreaming that you were walking over a long stretch of country road and someone in a car stopped and invited you to ride, you would feel in your dream that it would be much pleasanter to travel over this long stony road via automobile than to walk that same distance, would you not? Now, the one standing in the road and entering the automobile symbolizes mortal man, and the mind considering the walk and the road and the car symbolizes mortal mind. For it was none other than this mind that created the road and the car and created the one standing there. But this mind, if told, if instructed, you are not here in this road at all, you are but dreaming this, would cease its dream, would cease itself, and the whole dream of nothing would vanish. Suppose that one is a practitioner, a healer and teacher, but finds that his office is empty. Whereas he would heal, there are no sick arriving. Whereas he would preach, there are no students seeking his instruction. How then is he to demonstrate? How is he to instruct his mind about this problem? He is to tell his mind that there are no sick people, that there are none to be taught, and that he, the true man, knows that immortals are always drinking with him of the river of the water of life, are always partaking with him of the joys of true instruction. Such instruction, then, would be no actual instruction, but would dislodge this false belief, this false mind, to the glory of truth. As these lines are being written, a letter arrives with this question. Do you claim that the body that we see is mortal, or is the body spiritual as long as one is thinking rightly? In the dream of human experience, as well as in the sleeping dream, the dreamer thinks that his body is material, that it has sensation, life. Now, one's body is as material to him as is his belief. The dream of material living, the body, is controlled by the mind. But in reality, soul governs the body, for the true body is the reflection of spirit, soul, self. We do not have to develop or unfold or attain a perfect body, for the body was, is, and ever shall be perfect. The image of spirit must be as perfect as spirit. Another asks, did you not think and reason to write your books? Yes. There is no reproach against thinking. One should think and reason. One should not go around with his eyes closed because he discovers that God is his sight. We do not give up our eyes and ears, our hands and feet, nor do we renounce our thought and reason when we learn that matter is nothing for truth, is all. A false sense of the mind and of the body is all that we ever have to give up. We keep the eyes, the ears, the hands and feet. We keep the mind and the body. We keep that which brings peace and love and joy and glory. A mirror is true when it is clear and clean and reflects a true picture. We should think of mind and body as perfectly reflecting soul, life, love. We use our senses knowing that they are not material, but they are spiritual, perfect. We do not think of our mind as mortal and false, but we think of intelligence as divine and as forever reflecting right ideas. We think of our bodies as spiritual, as marvelous as the light of day. In the night dream, the mind believes that it has two bodies, one on the couch and another out in the dream. In the dream of walking over the long stretch of country road and encountering the automobile, it believed that it had a body that stepped into the car and drove away. Now, although the mind thought and experienced such a body, there was only the one body all this time, the body on the couch. The other body was a dream body, a belief body only. Entirely separate from the dream world is the waking experience. Entirely separate from the waking experience is the actual universe. Entirely separate from the belief that our hands can touch objects only within a radius of an arm's length is the fact that our hands might touch the sky. Entirely separate from the belief that we can see only within the radius of a certain number of miles, we have a vision that can reach over the universe. We have bodies that can be visible and invisible, that can be light as the air, weightless as the feather, brilliant as the sun. Entirely separate from the belief of a mortal, sick, aging body is the perfect, birthless, deathless body of light. When the universe and man are interpreted by science, they can be understood. But when one seeks to interpret them from the basis of matter and mind, they continue to be but mystery, enigma. The idea of living in a false world, in a false body, a dream body, is dispelled as one believes, accepts, and understands truth. The day of judgment for us is that day in which we know that we are living in the land of reality, now, that we are drinking now of the living water, even as Jesus declared. One conquers the material world when he sees that there is no material world to conquer. One overcomes matter when he sees that there is no matter to be overcome. One overcomes a lie when he perceives the nothingness of the lie. One heals the sick when he knows the unreality, the nothingness, the deception of sickness. One raises the dead when he knows there are no dead. One triumphs over mortality as he recognizes the one being. The redemption of the world is, we are in the land of truth now. At any hour, at any moment, man can walk in the heavenly world, the kingdom of truth according to his vision, according to his understanding. Nothing is impossible to him who believeth. Demonstrations over the body are not made when one moves away from the body, nor when one endeavors to separate himself from his body, but demonstrations are made when one forgets his body. Miracles take place when one forgets his hands and feet, forgets his thoughts and meditations, when something snatches him up and away and all he knows is that he is the joy of truth. I recall an early experience which I was never able to explain materially. It happened while dressing one morning that I discovered that the heel of one of my shoes was completely missing, and at that time I had no other available pair. This was a great catastrophe to me, as my feet were causing me much suffering, and these were the only shoes that I could manage to wear. Besides, at this time, I was leaving the house early for the business world. I immediately telephoned a practitioner stating the seeming condition to her. I explained that I had a brand new pair of shoes in my closet, but they were too small for me to wear comfortably, as I was suffering very much with swollen, tender feet. She advised me to wear them, nevertheless saying that although to the world it seems that a quart could not be placed into a pint measure, still it could be done, and finished her advice with the Bible command, "Stand, therefore, having your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace." Now, I had never doubted truth, nor the Bible promises, nor my practitioner's understanding, and obedience always came very easy to me. It never occurred to me at this time to do other than what I was told to do. Accordingly, I brought out the new, tight shoes from the closet, shoes which I had never worn, and I had shoved and pushed my feet into them, lacing them tightly to the top, while all the time the tears came splashing down my cheeks, for my suffering seemed very great. There were two long flights of stairs to be encountered. I took a few steps, but it was impossible for me to proceed as the pain was now overpowering. I then decided to sit on the steps one at a time. In this fashion, I finally reached the main floor. Just at this moment, I saw our letter carrier entering the vestibule, and as I did not want him to see me in this position, I took hold of the post near me for support, hiding behind it until he went out and off the porch. Then something took place which only those who believe in miracles will accept. I never knew how I left that position, how I traveled a mile to my place of position. The next time that I became conscious of my body was late that afternoon. Sitting alone at my desk, my glance happened to fall down upon my shoes. I couldn't seem to place or recognize them. Why? Where? What? Then, like a flash, it came sweeping over me. My feet! Stunned, I sat in the chair, traveling back in my mind to the moment when I hid behind the post, but I could go no further. How I left my home, how I traveled to a place a mile away, was a complete mystery to me, and I have never known. So completely had I lived apart from my body all this time that it was as though I had no body, no feet at all. I now discovered that the shoes were perfectly comfortable, and that night when I glanced at my feet, I found that they were quite normal, and all the discordant conditions had vanished. In an hour, when ye think not, you will find yourself in heaven. Take ye no thought. There must arrive that hour when man forgets that he is sick, when man forgets that he is in pain, when man forgets that he is in prison, when man forgets that he is in a material world. Oh, how glorious to forget matter! To forget mind, to forget personality. How marvelous to forget to prepare food to sustain life, to forget to sleep, to forget to labor with hands and minds. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Forgetting the dream, we waken to the real. Forgetting the untrue, we find only the true. Forgetting the evil, we perceive the glory. Forgetting the many, we perceive the one. One day a man lay in a dying state. He could not move hand nor foot. He sent for a practitioner, who came and seated herself at his side. They were both silent for several moments. Then it came to the practitioner what a queer idea of man this was. Why, he couldn't move, he couldn't walk, he couldn't talk. How did he compare with God's man of glory and light and marvel and wonder? Oh, what a mockery, what a parody! Suddenly it came to her that it was like a joke, a big joke. She actually felt like laughing. Soon the man on the bed moved his face and looked at her and smiled. Soon they both smiled. Then they commenced to laugh together, quietly at first, then noisily and heartily. "Why, I can't stop laughing," he said. He caught the vision. "Do you think I could move, could sit up, could stand?" he whispered. "Why not?" laughed the one at his side. And this man on the bed forgot his pain, forgot to die. For in the twinkling of an eye he had understood, he had seen the farce, he had seen through the veil. No longer deceived, he walked forth as he was, the whole glorious man of God. How can one stop an illusion? It is asked. For instance, if one is deluded into believing that he has sickness, how can he cease such delusion? What destroys error is disbelief in it. One never treats matter or mind or body or personality. What one does is to know and declare and insist that a belief has no effect upon the mind or body, that a belief has no effect upon life, substance, or reality. If one were dreaming at night that he was in a burning building, racing from window to window, from floor to floor, for a way of escape, how can the building, the fire, and the notion that he is in danger be compelled to cease? Shut off the dream. If the dream stopped, then the man in the burning building, the fear, the fire, would all cease automatically. Is this not so? For the root, the avenue, the channel for this illusion of false pictures is the notion of a dream. To shut off a dream would be to shut off its pictures. Now the channel for a false dream in the waking or human experience, the channel for the pictures of pain, fear, disease, evil, is the dream called false belief. This was clearly shown in the example of one who is eating bread, yet is believing that he eats melon. If the one who is eating the bread did not have the belief that it was a melon, he would not have that false picture of melon before his vision, would he? When the people stopped believing the earth to be flat, the false picture of the flat earth which they appeared to see ceased. And what caused the belief that the earth is flat to cease? The perception that the earth is spherical. Now, in our waking experience called human existence, the false pictures called disease, evil, can be traced back to false belief. And then we must acknowledge that the deliverer of false belief is truth. When one sees the bread to be bread, then the delusion automatically ceases. When one sees that the earth is round, the delusion that it is flat is set aside. And when one is conscious of the act of truth, conscious of understanding, then the false belief is rendered nil. All limitations called evil, sickness, are destroyed automatically as belief in them is destroyed, shut off. In the world of reality, there is no false belief. There is no false belief in heaven, no false belief in the spiritual world. Therefore, when we treat, we not only perceive the nothingness of the pictures called evil and limitation, but we also perceive the nothingness of the false belief or channel through which they seem to come. Now it is plain to be seen that the dream at night could not come into play without a dreamer, without a mind to weave it out into the dream pictures. It is like this in the dream called material existence, existence in the flesh. If there were no one to believe in evil, there would be no false pictures called evil to be seen. Is this clear to you? A dream could find no channel without a dreamer, and the experience called sickness would find no channel without a believer. How can I demonstrate friends, a companion, a home of my own? Know that the way you wish to be is the way you are. The actuality is first, and the wish is secondary. Without the actuality, there would be no wish, the same as without the original, there would be no picture of that original. All things are possible, for all things are but pictures, images. Today we are here, tomorrow we are there. Let us perceive that the here and the there are the same. The rose in the mirror and the child in the mirror are the same, for neither one is there. The here and the there, the this and the that, are all images in the mind or the mirror. One can have one as well as another. Our companions are the immortals, spiritual beings. We are actually never alone, never weary, never lonesome. We are living in the midst of divine companionship, experiencing the joys, beauties, and harmonies of heaven. This is the fact of truth, which we declare because it is so. This recognition is like the act of holding a rose before a mirror. The rose inevitably appears in the mirror. Holding the facts of life in our vision, we very soon see the reflection in this world about us. Friends, companions, homes open to us as though by magic, and in such charming and unexpected fashion. Labor not with affirmations and denials, but toss your wish lightly into the mirror of effulgence, understanding that it is because it is already granted that you can have it, that it is now at hand, that it is already visible before you. It is because of the coming of your wish that the hour is here. The moment has arrived when you are to enjoy the experience of it. When our bell reverberates in the front hall, this is an announcement to us that someone has come. Someone stands waiting admittance. And with our feet in the true road and our vision placed on high, when the wish throbs within us, we can be sure that something awaits us. Something is calling our attention. The moment is here when we are to experience some fuller joy, some greater delight. Thus we perceive that man reaches all things through himself. How can I stop thinking wrong thoughts, foolish thoughts, thoughts that I do not wish to think? In the first place, do not fight them. You know what happens when you stand before a mirror and throw out your arms and toss your head, do you not? Therefore, do not fight thoughts with thoughts. There is a better way. Instead of seeing and feeling and hearing such thoughts as though they were part of you, speaking to you from within, learn to look upon them as though they were apart from you, separate from you. The same as if one approached you with a story which you did not care to hear, for you were otherwise occupied and you turned away to be alone. So when these moods or unruly thoughts come upon you, do not be excited or cast down or combative or overwhelmed, but learn to look at them and turn away from them. Learn to look at them and understand them. Now once you can perceive their nothingness, you will be surprised the quietness and the calmness that will be with you. When you are afraid of your thoughts, when you would flee from them, you are mesmerized into believing that they are something, that they have power, are you not? With but a grain of understanding or insight, you can perceive that there is no power at all in the mind, nor in the thoughts of the mind. This insight will afford you immediate relief. You will run no longer in terror of your thoughts, but you will stand still and look at them, the same as you might look at a picture of a lion on a sheet of white paper. It looks as though it might harm, but all the same you know that it can't. Look upon thoughts of fear, of doubt, of worry, of hate, of jealousy, as though you were looking upon something apart from yourself, something utterly without power. Something that can't harm. Say to these thoughts, if you like, go on, fear as much as you like, worry as much as you please. It really doesn't matter to me, since you are nothing anyhow. It really doesn't matter what you say, as long as you can't do anything or be anything. Why, it doesn't really matter how you race around or flurry or fume. It really doesn't matter to me at all, for I perceive you are nothing. And when you say this, you must feel it to be so, and presently you will be quite alone. These evil companions, which you believed were part of you, will have entirely vanished. Always when you wish a thing to cease, to depart, to vanish, to be still, see that thing in its true light. See that thing as nothing. To see a thing as nothing is to be delivered from the false belief. And to be delivered from the false belief is true deliverance, is emancipation, is the act of truth. Look upon moods, mental thoughts, as though you were looking at pictures on the wall. You will then be able to control your mind. And as you pierce through this wall of ignorance, you assert the truth about yourself. You look to that which is yourself, and you say with love and assurance, I am happy. I am content. I am free. I am peaceful because of the truth which is established, because of the truth which is omnipresent, because of the truth which is here now. I do not believe in evil. I do not believe in fear. I do not believe that power is anything except in truth, in God Almighty. Understanding is demonstration. Understanding is power, is freedom. Understanding of the allness and the nothingness is emancipation, salvation. Instruction helps one to tear off the garment of ignorance, helps one to cease believing falsely about himself. Instruction comes to the thirsty one like a flask of pure cold water. Instruction comes to the fearful one like gentle benediction, like an angel presence, like a garment of peace thrown around one, like loving arms enfolding one. Instruction comes to the ignorant one like beautiful music in his ears, like new paths for his feet to walk upon, like a new world which he is entering. Instruction comes to the hungry heart like living fires, blazing and burning, bearing him up on wings of love divine, delivering to him a glory unspeakable, a peace, a glory, a power indescribable.